Hello and welcome to The Neighbor Next Door, a podcast about the power and importance of neighboring. I'm your host, Matthew Johnson, and as usual, I'm joined on the front porch by my colleague in neighboring, Adam Barlow Thompson.
Hello, Matt. Welcome to the front porch. We have a special guest today.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. You may be familiar with him. He recently wrote a book called Worship.
Wow.
Do you know this guy?
I do. Yeah. I do. I mean, if you write a book called Worship, it's just not, so all-encompassing.
It's not the most creative title.
I didn't get to title the book.
Ladies and gentlemen, today's episode is with the author, Matthew Johnson, who recently, when did this book, it was released just the month ago or so?
Yeah, it came out the end of 2019.
End of 2019, Matt had a new book, his first published book.
That's right.
Yeah, and so we somewhat begrudgingly convinced him to talk about the book on the podcast.
It's true. It's true.
Because he wrote the book, but if you know Matt, and I think many of our podcast listeners do, he's not great at the self-promotion.
It's not a strong suit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So today, I'm here to do the promotion.
All right.
That's right, folks. You can buy this book today.
Yes.
But seriously, they can buy it, right?
They can. Yeah. It's available on Amazon.
Like where books are sold.
Yeah. Yeah. I think anywhere. I mean,
mainly online, though. Like if they went into their Barnes & Noble, they probably won't buy it.
Not that I know of. I'd be really surprised.
Man, if that happens, I'm going to go to Barnes & Noble and you are going to stand next to the book and take a picture.
Well, you call me when you find it. And
we can just sneak a book in and you can take a picture.
Yes.
That'd be fun.
They'd be like, hey, are you stealing that book? And then they'd see it and they'd be like, no, we don't carry that book. You clearly brought that in.
Who is that guy? No.
Well, and maybe it's worth mentioning, like, obviously this is not an episode about neighboring.
Oh, yeah, we should say that.
I think, because, and it's going to be overtly Christian, because it is a Christian book.
Right.
And so, yeah, we're kind of cross-pollinating here, I think.
Right.
To bring this up. But also, like, you and I have these other jobs that we do.
That's right.
We do these things
outside
of the neighboring movement.
Yeah, and I look, there's a section about the neighborhood in there.
Yeah, yeah, is there?
Yeah, there is. There is.
Yeah, no, I try to get as
it's
much.
It's in my list of questions.
Oh, okay, all right, good.
Which
good.
I meticulously created.
Curated.
Yes. So don't worry, everybody.
It's good.
We'll get there. We'll make it all come back together eventually.
Yeah.
So the book is called Worship. It's from a series that Elaine Heath is the editor for,
yes,
and published by Abingdon Press. And so kind of give us the backstory, like how did it come about? How did they approach you? What did they ask for when they were looking for the book?
Yeah. So the book came to be because Elaine Heath was the general editor for the series. And she came to me and said, I'm working on this. Would you be interested in contributing a book? Mm-hmm. And honestly, my whole life, I've wanted to write a book. I mean, when I was in fifth grade career day, I still remember wearing a button-down linen shirt carrying a typewriter to school
because I
wanted to be a writer.
That is amazing.
And I thought writers wore linen shirts.
Also, Glenna, Matt's mom, if you're listening and you have a picture of that, you can go ahead and send that to me, adam@neighboringmovement.org. That'd be great. Yes.
I don't think we have a picture of it because it was like pre-digital. I mean, I did carry a typewriter to school just to time frame that. So I've always wanted to, but also, like, I appreciate Dorothy Day's comment about, like, writing feels like a tremendous indulgence. Mm. It always feels like it's the last thing that I ought to do. You know, like,
yes,
there's all the things in the world, and then there's all the tasks of life, and then I should write, mm-hmm. you know? So it's mm-hmm. like, well, I've got 3 minutes at the end of each night, you know?
Right.
So Elaine asked me, and I wanted to say yes. But, you know, at the end of the day, when the opportunity came and they asked me if I wanted to do it, and I reflected on it, it really became one of those things where it's like, I can't not do this.
Right.
That was just like in my gut. I was like, yeah, I just really want to give this a try. Yeah.
If you didn't do it, that fourth grade linen shirt typewriter carrying kid would be yeah. weeping.
Yeah. He would be weeping, which then I would have written a song about. A sad song.
So sad. About... All minors.
All minor key. So anyway, so yeah, so, you know, and it was a great opportunity because there's a contract that you sign, and I just got paid up front, flat amount. Mm-hmm. They publish it, they release it, they do, you know, so it's a very low pressure kind of deal. Right. And I thought, well, this is great. Like, it's not a big book. It's I think mm-hmm. 35,000 words was the goal.
It's a quick read.
It is a very quick read.
Right.
And that's, and the parameters that they asked for uh-huh. were like, they want 4 chapters and they want it just to be, you know, very accessible. You know, and that was kind of Elaine's vision. So it's part of this right. whole series, and they're very practical and they're focused on different spiritual practices like worship. And so yeah, she was like, I just want it to be really accessible for mm-hmm. folks. And I, you know, I will say, I think the only other piece was that in writing a book about worship, it's kind of like, I mean, aren't there like a gazillion books about yeah. worship, right?
There's a few.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I found really daunting at first. And then I thought, well, you know what? I'm going to take the opposite view. And the opposite view is there's so many books about worship that I just need to focus on what I know and what I experience of worship and not try to write the comprehensive book about yeah. worship, because I'm sure that's out there.
Oh, for sure.
There's like 100 versions of it.
Nobody wants to read it either.
No, exactly. So I just started in, and, you know, my main training is in spiritual direction.
Right.
And like helping people listen to their own spiritual journeys to see like what these practices mean for them. And that was really what came up. It was like, what's the personal experience of worship?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the other piece of it is, how does worship impact the way that we live in the world?
Yeah.
I grew up with a mindset that split those things up.
Right.
That they were two separate things. So, and that was what Elaine wanted, was how did these things connect
yeah.
with the world? And that was an interesting thing to wrestle with.
So let me just have you read this one portion, this one paragraph of the book, because I think it talks about what you're saying of it, like worship, but not just like when you go to church worship.
So often we equate the spiritual practice of worship with the worship service we attend. But what happens when we no longer consider worship something we do, but a way we live? When we break the concept of worship outside the walls of a sanctuary, we find new energy for living a Godward life, a life of turning toward God moment by moment, day by day. Such a life is fuel for genuine worship and opens us to God's transforming love, enabling us to engage in practices of worship in locations and situations we never dreamed of before.
Yeah, that's what I'm yeah. talking about, Matt Johnson.
So my definition for worship is that it is a spiritual practice of responding to God's grace.
Spiritual practice of responding to God's grace.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, explain that.
Yeah. So let's start with the word responding.
Okay.
So responding is this idea that we can respond in any sort of way,
mm-hmm.
right? So even with respond, we want to broaden that. So mm-hmm. it's not just grabbing your guitar and singing at the top of your lungs all the time.
Right. I mean, 90s Christian song.
Lord, I lift your name on high.
Or shine, Jesus, shine.
Oh man, we're so burning for this one.
We are clearly Christians of a particular era and a particular location.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yes. Okay. Yeah. So any sort of response to God's grace, which then leads, I think, to, you know, what do we mean by God's grace? God's grace is simply God's action in our lives and in the world. I take that from Dallas Willard, and I really like that it's God's action in our life. So, like, when I started to wrestle with that, I was like, well, what does that mean? And when you look at the Gospels, this really fascinating thing stands out. Like, Jesus is always acting.
Mm-hmm.
So he's always exemplifying the nature of God and how God acts. So here's just a bullet list of things that I noticed. Like, Jesus welcomed people.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus listened to the voiceless. Jesus healed the hurting. Jesus forgave sinners. Jesus guided people who were seeking. Jesus fed the hungry. Jesus challenged those who were in authority.
Right.
So that's God's action.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we can step back from that and say, Jesus is God and therefore reveals to us the types of things that God is still doing in our lives and in our world.
Right.
Right. Right. So God is still welcoming those who have been excluded.
Yeah.
God is still listening to the voiceless.
Right.
God is still healing the hurting, etc.
Yeah.
And so we, you know, broaden that, because oftentimes we just think, I'm speaking really sweeping, but like, my background, grace was only understood in terms of forgiveness of sins.
Yeah.
And that's true, but it's so much more than that. So once we begin to see, okay, so worship then is this kind of spiritual act of responding, and in whatever way, through gratitude,
right,
through awe, through song, through silence, right, just responding to all of these ways that we see God's love still unfolding around us. Can I give an illustration?
Yeah, here? Absolutely.
And hopefully I can do this succinctly. But the analogy that I used in the book is, my understanding of worship is very comparable. It parallels my understanding of jazz music.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was a kid, when I was in middle school, I played in jazz band.
I'm sure it was amazing.
Rural Indiana. 8 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Not that we could have played better at 8 p.m., but still, just you know, and I loved it. I enjoyed it.
Uh-huh.
I thought it was really great.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea what jazz really was. Right? I mean, just no.
No, you didn't.
No idea.
There's no way that compares.
Seventh and eighth graders, and we didn't even have a whole band, right? Because it was a small school.
Right.
So that was our understanding. But if you had said, what's jazz? I would have said, oh, it's Thursday mornings at 8. And it's me, you know, playing my trombone, right? And like with zero swing, right? Like, and like zero soul.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, fast forward, after 2005 and Hurricane Katrina hits the Gulf Coast, and I started taking teams down to New Orleans, and just through coincidence, I met a trombone player, and I helped actually redo the sheetrock in his home, because it was flood damaged.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Craig Klein, and he's a trombone player for Harry Connick Jr.
Right, so just the same as you.
Yes, yes. Only slightly different in the sense of, you know, maybe actually knows what jazz is.
Yeah, right.
And so he was like, oh man, you know, while you're here, you got to come down to this place called Tipitina's.
Mm-hmm.
And so we go down. I mean, the music at Tipitina's, it's in this old part of New Orleans, which is saying something.
Yeah.
It's this two-story dance hall with a stage for live music. And the music doesn't even start until 10 p.m.
Yeah.
Because it's jazz, right? And you go in and it's this whole lifestyle.
Right.
It's so alive and it's purely interactive. I mean, mm-hmm. so the band, and just to kind of like snapshot of this, you've got the soloist, right, who's playing during a song and improvising.
Mm-hmm.
But then the surrounding instrumentalists, they start playing off of the soloist to come up with a backup part on the spot, right? And they're like listening to each other and listening mm-hmm. to the soloist. And then like all of this builds and builds and builds, and the crowd, which is all on their feet, right, mm-hmm. gets more and more excited and is like clapping and dancing and responding
mm-hmm.
until it just reaches this fever pitch, and then it just like breaks open and they play the main melody again.
Right.
And then the next soloist starts and it kind of breaks down. But it's this, there's this flow between the musicians and yeah. the crowd and the song. Right. It's all very alive. Yeah. And, you know, I walked away from that experience, obviously realizing I had no idea what jazz was. And, you know, I also realized that if I had been born in New Orleans, I would never have even graduated high school. Like, jazz to me is so beautiful and amazing. I would never have, I would, the moment I had gotten into Tipitino's, I never would have left.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
I think that we have the same perception of worship.
Mm-hmm.
We worship from a young age, and we think that worship is just sitting and being nice and quiet and consuming whatever gets put before us. And it's not. It's this whole interactive experience where I think we could say God is the soloist, and those who are leading worship are the backup instrumentalists mm-hmm. who are responding to what God's doing. But the crowd is also participating. And then the invitation is for us to take the melody out into the world, because that's where the song still plays.
Right.
So anyway, I'll stop there.
Terrific way of laying that out, though.
Thank you. I was very excited when that came.
That really is helpful. I think mm-hmm. that, I don't know where that is in the book because I haven't read it yet, but I'm gonna steal it and put it into lots of things.
It's in the first chapter.
Oh, perfect.
So you don't even have to read the whole book if you want that.
So one more quick section that I wanted to draw attention to is in chapter 4. And it's where you yes. share about the Walnut Valley Bluegrass Festival and Camp Fork and Folk.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
So just, you know, riff on that for a moment, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, well, you know, so kind of the arc of the book is to start with defining worship and then this kind of like what worship does to us, how it shapes us, how it deepens our relationship with God. And then I guess to kind of play on that idea of a melody, mm-hmm. it's like once you've practiced attuning your ear to the melody of what God is doing in the world or God's song in the world, then you start to hear it in unexpected places,
right,
and unexpected ways. And so we're at this gigantic bluegrass festival at our campsite,
right,
and we're playing Fork and Folk.
The Fork and Folk, it's a thing we do. We gather neighbors, we eat, and we play folk music. That's yeah. basically it. And we do it at the festival for like 5 days straight. Some of us do it for like 10 days straight, but others do it for like 5 days straight.
That's right. That's right. So we're gathered around one night, and we're just playing songs out of the book, and people are invited to pick songs and jam. And it's just, I mean, it's just fun. And it's amazing how people connect through yeah. songs, right? And the things Absolutely. That come up. So one of the things, one of the, you know, a classic folk song is Old Time Religion.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're playing that song, and we've made a modification to it in the sense that we invite people while they're playing to call out the name of someone, a person who's been important in their own spiritual journey, and then we put that person's name into the chorus, right? Because
right.
it was good for, you know, Paul and Silas is one of the original lines, right?
Right.
And it's yeah. good enough for me.
Yeah.
But you can put in there, right? It was good for Desmond Tutu, yeah. and it's good enough for me. Or it was right. good for my grandma Lewis, and it's yeah. good enough for me. And so this shift happened where people began to name people who are really important to them.
Yeah, and it's so, like, you can hear it's so touching
yeah.
when they do that. And the whole, like, feel of the under the tent.
Yeah.
Changes. It's beautiful. And it's worship.
It's worship.
I almost swore there because I wanted to add emphasis.
Yes,
but it is. Yeah. It's worshipful.
It's worshipful.
Yeah.
Because what's happening? We're responding to God's grace.
Right.
And God's grace was embodied in those people. And that's why we lift up their names and we're responding with a song sitting in a circle. And you can do that anywhere.
Right.
Right. And so, yeah, it's just, it completely changes it when we start to see how it can move out into the world in so many ways.
Right. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So I think last question is, like, who would want to read this book? How would they use it?
I think if you're a person who has struggled with worship,
mm-hmm.
I would encourage you to read it.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten some feedback from folks who are, you know, distant from church, and they have found it very encouraging and,
yeah.
and very accessible. It is designed for small groups to read. So if you're, you know, if you have a Sunday school class or a mm-hmm. church group, you can certainly read it. And it's a fast read and you could do it in a month
right.
or even less.
There's like discussion questions at the back of each
yeah,
chapter.
Yeah,
kind of
yeah, yeah. But yeah, I mean, my hope is that it would be encouraging for people both inside and outside church to see worship in a whole, you know, different way. The day that I finished it,
mm-hmm.
I bumped into Warren Farha, who owns Eighth Day Books, which is, Richard Rohr has described Eighth Day Books as the greatest Christian bookstore in the world.
Right, right here in Wichita, Kansas.
Right here in Wichita. It's
That's
an
right.
asset. And Richard's not exaggerating. And it had not crossed my mind at all until I saw Warren's face that I had just written a book, and he sells books. I was like, oh my. And so in a moment of aha, I was like, mm-hmm. Warren, I just wrote a book. And he was like, well, I'll sell it. And I was like, oh yeah, right, you could do that. I didn't even think about that, which I still need to get in touch with him.
Self-promotion, Matt.
I know, I'm working on it. And so he said, well, what's it about? And I said, well, it's about worship. And Warren, who's a very, very thoughtful person of tremendous depth, he goes, worship. There's nothing more integral to the human spirit than giving thanks.
Mm.
And I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I did a good enough job.
You're like, I gotta go back home. Right. I need to make some edits.
That's right. It's not good enough. But it was, I didn't. I trusted my gut. But I
yeah,
think
you did get that quote in there. I saw that. He's in there.
Yeah, because it was later that I got to write the introduction to the book. And so I was like, oh, I'm gonna use that because
right.
I think the thing and the reason I share that is because he was right. The deepest part of, I think, all of humanity is to give thanks and gratitude mm-hmm. and to respond. And I think to encourage people to do that, however you do that, and you don't have to be a Christian. And, you know, like your understanding of God can be very different than mine. But I just encourage people to do that because it helps us connect with a part of ourselves that is so deep and so life-giving.
All right. Well, thanks for being a guest on the front porch and to this podcast, which you also host.
I'm a guest on my own front porch. Well, thanks for guiding the conversation.
Oh, absolutely. It's awesome. Can't wait to read the book.
I mean, why bother now? You've got all the good points.
I've got all the good stuff. I don't know. I'll skim through it. You know, I've looked at some parts.
That's right. That's right.
Well, thank you for listening to The Neighbor Next Door, a podcast that is a production of The Neighboring Movement. You can check out all of our stuff at neighboringmovement.org.
Now, do I just type in neighboringmovement.org?
You don't have to add www. You don't. You can just do it. neighboringmovement.org. On your typewriter, Matt, you can.
Yes.
And you'll find lots of good stuff there, including our neighboring tips and other awesome things designed by the awesome Vista, Christopher Swanson, who also edits these podcasts.
Indeed.
And the music is brought to you by one part of the jazz band from rural Indiana.
from, That's what I bring.
From the 80s is now part of Brutal Bear. So Brutal Bear provide the music for the podcast, and we look forward to seeing you next time on the front porch. So happy neighboring.
Happy neighboring.